Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 217 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today it is Monday, so we're continuing our series on looking at my preparations for September and my food self-sufficiency challenge, and we're going through sort of ticking off lots of different food groups, and we've come to one today that is one that I do feel that I'm very much prepared for and is going to be one of the simpler ones for me to fill, and that is the group of meat. Now, I'm a carnivore, I eat quite a lot of meat, and I understand that a lot of my listeners may be vegetarians or vegans. So obviously, no hard feelings if you feel that you'd like to skip this episode. But I am going to be talking a little bit, not about the processing of meat so much, but about my management of the whole idea and what my preparations look like and what my plans are for September. So the first thing to say is, of course, meat is something that I could choose not to eat through September. That's something that would be an option to me. Now, it's not an option that I'm really looking at insofar as any kind of long-term planning. I feel that, you know, meat is going to be a part of my diet and, you know, going forward. And I feel like I've taken all the appropriate steps to eat ethically and responsibly in that regard. And if you're interested in my views all around that, I feel like I fleshed them out pretty well in a two-part series called Ethical Eating. I think that's what it was called. Please go and check out those podcasts if you haven't heard them already. But that aside, you know, I'm going to try and keep clear of that sort of ground today, and I'm going to talk more about the nuts and bolts of what my meals are going to look like in September, why and how, etc., etc. So obviously, the, you know, the main thrust of our meat production here over the last year or so has been pork, and I've shared a lot of my journey with you on that. I've slaughtered and butchered a pig last week, and I'll be doing a second one just in the next day or two. So that's going to give what would really be about a year's worth of pork for our family, and it's going to probably half fill our chest freezer with it. And the reason why I like pork so much as an option, and there are lots of other options and lots of other types of meat that I actually have available to me, which we will get into later on in the episode, but the reason pork is such a valuable one for me is, on one hand, you know, you've got the accessibility of being able to raise it and what have you, but on the other hand, you've got all the different produce that you actually create from pork. So, you know, you make sausage meat, bacon, ham, then you've got the, you know, the big pieces of joints that you can roast. And what we've taken to doing very recently with a lot of it is actually pulling it and using pulled pork as a substitute basically for minced beef, and it works really well. So it just enables me, just from one type of animal, it sort of opens the way to loads and loads of different meals. As I speak, I have a huge pot of chili con carne that we've made with pulled pork instead of roast beef in the fridge. Obviously, you've got your roasting joints for, you know, big cuts of, you know, roast dinner type meals and, you know, meat and potatoes and vegetable type meals, pork chops and things like that. But on top of that, you've also got ham for sandwiches or to go with crackers and cheese, and bacon and eggs. You know, there's just such a vast array of different meals. And I just think that that variety is another fantastic reason why it suits our purposes really, really well. So at the moment, as you guys will probably know, I cure all my own bacon and ham, and I've got hams and bacons curing in the fridge as we speak from our latest pig. That will all be ready in time for September easily. It'll be ready in a few days, in fact. And we've also got sausage meat. And I didn't actually make any sausage meat this time because we still have some left over from our last pig, but I will make some with the next one. And, you know, that's going to, again, go in the fridge and freezer. And, you know, that probably is going to be in, I'm not going to be eating meat every meal, but in the meals that I do eat meat, I'm suggesting that probably 70% of them will be pork. Pork will be the element of meat in that meal. So, as I've mentioned, you know, one pig comfortably lasts our family about 6 months. Now, obviously, that's interspersed with other meat that we eat, but we don't tend to eat a tremendous amount of meat that we don't produce here. We do eat some beef. We have a friend that raises two or three cows a year, and we have in the past traded some pork for some beef, or some goat meat for some beef. We also have, actually, in our freezer, a whole goat, which I've recently brought back from my nan's, my grandmother's house, where it sat throughout the whole lockdown and pandemic. So it's been in there a little while. Well, that doesn't bother me. I'm quite happy with how it's been frozen and kept at that temperature and everything else. So, you know, that frees up another whole type of meat. And when it comes to goat, I basically treat it exactly the same as I would lamb. So, you know, that's another big type of meat that's available to me. And, you know, I'll probably be having that in some curries and things like that. Maybe some, you know, even a roast leg with something like, let me think, rosemary. And I'd like to say marmalade. Rosemary, marmalade and garlic was where my mind went immediately. But of course, marmalade isn't something I'm going to be able to eat in September. So I'll have to come up with an alternative. But don't worry about that. I'm sure I will. So, you know, in terms of red meat and the bigger animals, we are definitely sorted. Now, of course, option wise, you could always use cattle. And if you're going to try and raise your own meat and you're thinking of doing beef, all I would say is it can actually be done relatively simple. It takes a lot longer to raise a calf to finished size. It takes about 18 months rather than the sort of 6 to 9 months that it would take a pig. But obviously you're going to get a lot more meat, but it will need a lot more space. As always, the consideration with cows for me has always been just the amount of space that they take up. So that's why we've never gone for cows, and you will have to overwinter them. You know, you will have to feed them through the winter. So that's one consideration to think about. But, you know, obviously the idea of goats and pigs is really, really simple for us. And looking forward and not being able to raise pigs anymore, as you know, we can't here on the homestead. We're no longer allowed. So goats might actually start filling a much bigger portion of our diet insofar as meat. Now, it's a subject that is kind of a tricky one for the rest of my family, because the rest of my family and my children in particular definitely see our goats as pets. And, you know, that's part of having long-term livestock. If you've got milking goats like we have, and Sid, who's obviously a stud goat, and he's, you know, going to be here for a long time, they become pets. And their offspring very quickly take on that feeling of being a pet, because not only, you know, with goats, it's such a different thing to pigs. Pigs don't want to come and be stroked and cuddled and all those kinds of things. They do have characters, but they don't have characters like goats do. It's really easy to anthropomorphize a goat and start talking about them in, you know, the sort of same sort of terms as you talk about your friends. And we don't tend to do that with our pigs. The environment within which we keep them is very different as well. So the goats are in that open part pasture where we walk our dogs, where we, you know, spend family time, whereas we don't really see the pigs unless we're going up to feed them or look after them. So there are a few elements that change how those animals fit into our family. So the knock-on effect of that is that the rest of my family are definitely more reluctant to eat the goats. But it was that case with the pigs at the start, and we've made lots of inroads there. So we'll have to just see how that goes. But I'm not going to force anyone into anything here. That's not my goal. But it's definitely an option, and I think I'm going to see myself eating a bit more of that meat in the future. The other thing with goats as well is, you know, the kids are just incredibly cute. Now, piglets are cute, but, you know, you don't tend to, you know, my children aren't going to go in and sit down and start handling the piglets on their own, because mum wouldn't like that. But that's not the case with the goats, you know, because we're in there with the mums all the time. So it's really easy to become attached to them. And you know, that has positives and negatives. You know, for the animals that are here long term, it's fantastic. But if we wanted to look at them being here for a different purpose, then, you know, it raises challenges. You know, that being said, we have raised goats for meat in the past, and I have cooked it, and, you know, my family will eat it. It's just not as desirable, shall I say, to the rest of the family, particularly, you know, if they draw that link to a specific little goat kid that they raised and got very, very friendly with. So that's another side of it. So when it comes to larger animals, those really are the only solutions for September for me, but I think that's more than enough. And when it comes to smaller animals, then I really am a little bit spoilt for choice, and it's going to be a little bit more haphazard as to what I end up with on my plate throughout September. You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible. So when it comes to smaller animals for meat, we've got lots of options. Obviously, the first one that is front and centre is chickens. We raise a lot of chickens here. We've got quite a lot of Brahmas. I suggest we're probably going to have about 10 to 15 cockbirds that are going to be ready for harvesting anytime from, really, September might be a little bit early, so I'm going to say October, November onwards. Now, we do have two cockbirds that are definitely ready for harvesting, and they're going to be going in the freezer, and I'm going to be saving those for September, in fact. But those are probably going to be the only two birds for that month, and that's okay, because we have lots of other options. Now, of course, when it comes to meat birds, I've spoken on this topic quite a few times. We don't have any specific meat breed chickens here. We have had a couple in the past. It didn't work out for various different reasons, but the breeds that are specifically for meat, generally speaking, people would talk about Cornish cobs, which are like a broiler type chicken, and I have my own ethical concerns about them, and I don't think they make for happy, healthy animals. So they're not a breed that we're going to be using, and we do tend to go for the heritage breeds, and that's what we're doing here with our Brahmas, which are a multi-purpose bird. They lay lots of eggs, but they also get to a decent size. So they're not going to have those huge breasts that you're used to seeing in the supermarket markets, but they are going to be definitely of a decent size that are worth eating. So we are currently, as I say, in the midst of raising 30 or so Brahmas, and there'll be more throughout the year as they just, you know, breed themselves. They're a very broody animal. They go broody quite readily and will, you know, raise their own eggs, as well as, you know, we sometimes put some in our incubators and hatch some that way. But at the moment, as I say, we've got two birds that are ready for harvesting, and I'll be doing that at some point in the next week or two. They will then go in the freezer, and I will hang on to them until September, but we have lots of other options. Sticking with birds for a moment, now, pigeon is a fantastic meat. Pigeon breast is just so tender and delicate, and of course, we have a garden full of those, and they can be taken with an air rifle. And the same applies for pheasants. Pheasants we have wandering through our garden sporadically. We don't seem to have too many at the moment. It's not really the right time of year, and I wouldn't like to take any now. But in September, when all of their young will be of a size where they can look after themselves, then I have no ethical qualms with harvesting some of the older birds. And even now, I would quite happily harvest the male birds. And pheasant is, you know, a similar size to chicken. Even, you know, thinking about the sort of chickens that you would see in the supermarket, they're not quite to that size, but they're definitely comparable. And on the same lines of thinking, we also have rabbits. Now, I personally have never harvested a rabbit. I've never gone and caught one. And gone rabbit shooting, but it is something that I would love to add to my repertoire. And it's something that, depending on how the year shakes out, I think September would be a great time to find someone who was willing to take me rabbit shooting, that I could go and harvest some rabbit, because I think that's a fantastic ethical way of harvesting meat, but it's also a fantastically sustainable way of procuring meat, because they, as you will know, breed like rabbits. And you know, in my future, I think at some point I will get into breeding rabbits for meat, but at the moment it's not something that we're kind of set up to do, because we have all the same issues around the rest of my family eating it as we do with goats, but probably it would be even worse. And you know, but I have got to the point where my wife said she would actually happily eat a rabbit, a wild rabbit that I've harvested, and that's a big step actually in this house. So that's where we're going to start with that. Then after chickens and rabbits and pheasants, we also have some seawater and freshwater animals that I will certainly be looking to harvest. So first of all, we've got things like mussels that I can go and collect, and I absolutely love shellfish, and September is probably the best month of the year to be collecting mussels, because they put on lots of weight through the summer and they lose it through the winter. There's an old saying that you should only harvest mussels in months with an R in it. So September is the first month at the end of the summer that you can harvest them. And the reason for that is due to toxins that build up in their bodies during the summer. So I will definitely 100% be harvesting some mussels during my September challenge. The other thing to think about while we're there is also some freshwater harvesting of crayfish. Now, you'll probably have seen my crayfish video online, but if not, I do recommend that you check it out, because there's some great tips on there, not only of how you can harvest crayfish, but also where you might find them. Now, we have crayfish growing in our river just locally, literally a couple of hundred yards from our house. So as a birthday present, I was given 2 new crayfish traps. So I'm looking forward to trying them out when the weather warms up. It's definitely a lot more productive when the weather is nice and warm. But crayfish are a real delicacy and something that I'm definitely going to be looking forward to in September. And then, of course, we have other fish, bigger fish. I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to get out and do a little bit of trout fishing, because it's something I haven't done in a long, long time. But there's a few places near me I know where I can go trout fishing, one of which is absolutely free. And I'll be bringing you guys along with me on that journey, of course. And then the last one is for sea fishing is mackerel. Now, of course, there's a vast array of sea fishing that you can do, and a vast array of fish in the sea. But in terms of yield, and in terms of, you know, in terms of getting the most for the time that you want to spend, for me, it's a no-brainer, and it is mackerel. Because when the mackerel are in there, they come in close to the shore in vast shoals. You can cast for them off the beach. You can stand on the beach, cast your rod out, and haul them in. And if they're in close enough, you can literally bring in 50 mackerel in an hour. So it's definitely not sport, but that's not why I'm doing it. And in terms of ethical eating, you know, they are definitely a sustainable resource, and you know, line caught fish is about the most sustainable way of eating fish that you're going to find. So I'm definitely planning a couple of mackerel trips. The thing is with mackerel trips off the beach is that if they're not there, they're not there. And for me, it's about a 50-minute drive either way. And, you know, it's quite a commitment. So I would be setting aside probably the best part of a day to go mackerel fishing. And I could easily blank and come home with nothing. And sometimes they're in for an hour or two, and sometimes they're in for 10 minutes, and sometimes they're in for all day. You know, you just don't know until you get there. So that's something I am looking forward to, and I will definitely make a YouTube video on all of these excursions to bring you guys along with me. I'm really looking forward to documenting my journey in September. I think it's going to be an eye-opener, and I think it's going to be surprising for myself. I think I'm going to come across a few things that I just had no idea that, you know, were an issue for me, but may become one in September. So there you go. That's going to pretty much wrap us up for today. Thank you ever so much for listening. Before I go, I just want to really reiterate, you know, my thanks to all of you for all the different ways you support what I'm doing here. It really does touch me. And, you know, I wouldn't be doing this. I absolutely 100% would not still be doing this if it wasn't for all of the amazing support that I get. And, you know, that support comes in so many different ways. Obviously, it goes without saying, you know, the patrons of the show are just incredible, but also, you know, the people who leave me so many lovely comments on my YouTube videos, the people who make the time to come and check out the live streams on Sundays. And well, as of now, we're doing them the first Wednesday of every month as well in the evenings. But, you know, just by listening to the show, you are supporting what we're doing here. And, you know, I just really wanted to take the time to thank you all for supporting what I'm doing here. It means so much to me, so much to me, that I could never really articulate it fully. But yeah, there you go. Thank you all. And I will look forward to speaking to you very soon. Thank you. Bye. If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.